This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Subsequent books, they have the Nabiyyin, prophetic books, they have the historical books, and then they have their own apocryphal tradition as well, certain books that are accepted, other ones that aren't. And then you have the New Testament, which has the four Gospels, and then it has letters and the Acts of the Apostles, Revelation, a lot of debate amongst Christians also about some of the texts of the New Testament. So within the Jewish and the Christian tradition, there's debate. They're not all agreed upon, even on what actually the Bible is as a book. They're not in agreement. And then there's different versions of the Bible. There's different endings even to some of the Gospels, different narratives. There's a lot of apocryphal, which are books that are not accepted by a lot of the mainstream Christians, Catholics, don't accept certain books. The Protestants don't accept certain books that are in the Catholic Bible, which is why the Protestant Bible is different from the Catholic Bible. So this is one of the great blessings of Islam, is that we have one book, the Quran. And the Hadith, we have the Mutawatir Hadith, which are agreed upon largely. I mean, there's very few that there's any debates about. And then we have Ahad, and then we have the Sahih Hadith from that collection, and the majority of those are used validly for legal rulings that pertain to worldly matters, but they're not used according to the dominant opinion. There's a minority opinion that they're used also for creedal matters, but the dominant opinion of the overwhelming majority of scholars was that they're not. I mean, Ibn Taymiyyah differed from the majority on that, and a lot of his followers, especially today, there's books about that, accepting ahad hadith for creedal matters. But traditionally, the solitary hadith were not accepted for aqidah, because you have to have absolute certainty, and the solitary hadith do not, لا يفيد اليقين, يفيد الظن, وقد يفيد الظن الغالب, you know, they don't benefit, they don't give you certainty, they give you overwhelming evidence for something, but what's called in our legal tradition in the West, beyond a reasonable doubt, which is not absolute certainty, but it's, one could argue that there's always room, you could be wrong, but it's reasonable doubt. So anyway, somebody just came up to me afterwards and asked about, I guess he had mentioned one of these verses, which is in Isaiah 29, about the one who is given the book and says, read, and he says, I can't read. And he said that, he mentioned that to a Christian. They said, oh, that doesn't, you don't want that applied to your prophet, because the description that precedes it and after it. I mean, if you read the text, neither of what precedes it or comes after it relates specifically to it. It's not talking about that. So I just wanted to go over that for, if they're here, I don't know if that person's here tonight, but okay, for your edification. But you know, this Isaiah is not an easy book, first of all. It's a difficult book in the Bible. Like Daniel is a difficult book. Revelations is an impossible book. Some books are very clear, and other books, like the Quran, you have hazy verses and then you have very clear verses. But if you look, it's talking about the condition of the people about waging war against the people of God, and this is obviously specifically about the Jews, and it's a warning about be delayed and wait, blind yourselves and be blind, they become drunk but not with wine, they stagger but not with strong drink, for the Lord has poured over you a spirit of deep sleep, He has shut your eyes, the prophets. So the prophets are like the eyes. And he has covered your heads, the seers. And the entire vision shall be to you like the words of a sealed book, which when they give it to the one who is literate, saying, please read this, he will say, I cannot read it, for it is sealed. So it's like, if you know things, these people are in that state. But then it said, then the book will be given to the one who is illiterate, saying, please read this, and he will say, I cannot read. And then the Lord said, because there are people drawn near with their words. If you go down to just a few verses later, it talks about, it is not yet just a little while before Lebanon will be turned into a fertile field. And the fertile field will be considered as a forest. And on that day the deaf shall hear words of a book. Right? This book that's given to the illiterate one. And out of their gloom and darkness their eyes, the eyes of the blind shall see. And this is a description that is mentioned in the hadith that the Prophet opens blind eyes. And the afflicted also shall increase their gladness in the Lord. And the needy of mankind shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. In other words, it's going to extend beyond the Jews. Like, this message is going to be taken out to all the people, the needy of mankind. For the ruthless will come to an end, and the scorner, the mustahziyun, will be finished. Kafeinak al mustahziyin. And indeed, all who are intent on evil will be cut off in the shaniyakahuad uptah, who cause a person to be indicted by a word and ensnare him who adjudicates at the gate, and defraud the one in the right with meaningless arguments. Therefore, thus says the Lord who redeemed Abraham concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob shall not now be ashamed. You know, it's not a shame. Like, Yaqub's not ashamed that it's going to another people. Right? Nor shall his face now turn pale, but when he sees his children, the work of my hands in his midst, they will sanctify my name. Indeed, they will sanctify the Holy One and will stand in awe of the God of Israel, and those who err in mind will know the truth. Right? Those, the people that are astray now will come to know this truth that goes beyond Israel. And those who criticize now will accept instruction. And then woe to the rebellious children, Bani Israel. Right? Declares the Lord who execute a plan but not mine and make an alliance but not of the Spirit. It goes on. Anyway, obviously these are all things open to interpretation. I mean, the Jews aren't going to accept my interpretation of that. The Christians aren't going to accept it. And I want to really emphasize that I would not personally, you know, this is to strengthen our faith. I mean, I'm not talking to Jews or Christians, because the Quran very clearly, you know, in hadi ummatukum ummatan wahida wa ana rabbukum, and I'm your Lord. This ummah of yours is one ummah. I'm your Lord. You know, you have one Lord. This ummah of the Prophet ﷺ is one ummah. And fattaquni, you know, you should have pious awareness of me. But Allah says in the Quran about the Jews and the Christians, فَتَقَطَّعُوا أَمْرَهُمْ بَيْنُهُمْ زُبُرًا. Their affair was split into their own books. Like each one, كُلُّ حِزْبٍ بِمَا لَدَيْهِمْ فَرِحُونَ. Every group rejoicing in their book. Right? I mean, they're happy with what they have. You should be happy with what you have. They're happy with what they have. And Allah says to wait until the Yawm al-Qiyamah. And He's going to explain about what you were different. There's many verses in the Quran. تَرَبَّصُوا بَيْنِي مَعَكُمْ مِنْهُمْ مُتَرَبِّصِينَ. You just wait. سَأُنْبِئُكُمْ. I'm going to tell you. Right? Allah tells that He's going to explain everything. All the differences everybody had. فَاسْتَبِقُوا الْخَيْرَاتِ. Fight, vie with one another in good deeds. So I would not go, first of all, if you're not trained, I mean, I have a degree in comparative religion, you know, and I study, I don't know Hebrew, but I study New Testament Greek, and I can read New Testament Greek with a dictionary, and I spent a reasonable amount of time in the Bible, but I would not recommend, first of all, I wouldn't go to Christians or Jews with a presentation like this. Because it's just not—it's not the way that you go to. You got your whole book wrong, and you know. By the way, you're all astray, and you're going to hell. And you just don't talk to people like that, you know. And they have their interpretations. Everything that I presented to you, you'll find Christian responses to all this. They've read our material. They've read our polemics. They know about us. They're not just sitting around, you know. Oh yeah, they're right. I guess. You really should join them. I don't want to join them, you know. I mean, what about Christmas? You know, the Christmas trees, all those presents. Well, they have Eid. It's not the same. There's no Santa Claus in Islam. I don't know. You know, I mean, you can't, don't expect people, you know, just these religions have been around for a long time. Christianity has been around 2,000 years. Judaism has been around 3,000 years. This is a long time. And just people, Jews aren't just, they have they're 5,000 years into their calendar. We're only 1,400, right? They're 5,000 years into their calendar. You know, they're not just going to all, oh, of course, God. Yeah, why didn't we realize that 1,400 years ago? Some of them, you know, became Muslim. But, I mean, really, just respect these other religions. You know, I have family members that are, I actually have family members that are Jewish. Because my sister married, and her husband was Jewish. So I have family members that are Jewish. You know, our family get-togethers are like interfaith dialogues. I'm serious, because we've got all kinds in my family. We have more Muslims than any other group now. I'm trying to convince them democratically we should really be celebrating Eid as a family, because there are more Muslims now. So, but, you know, they don't think that you can just go and take these things and people are suddenly going to say, of course. It doesn't work like that. But for me, this is for us. You know, this is to strengthen our faith. Because to me, when I read these things, they're very clear. They're not clear to people that already have filters. I mean, you have to understand, we're dealing with centuries of filters. And that people, they're not going to just see what you see. Some of them do, and they write books about it. I mean, we have Jews that converted to Islam centuries ago and wrote books saying how this is all true. And the Prophet ﷺ was mentioned in the Bible. I have books in Arabic written 500 years ago by Jews that converted to Islam. Many Jews converted to Islam. But the Jews have their own interpretations. I mean, the Bible mentions Shiloh, you know, Shiluah, that the scepter from Judah, it will not be taken from Judah until Shiluah comes. Shiloh, one of the names of the Prophet ﷺ. And Shiloh can mean the praised one. And that in Hebrew, I mean, there's a different opinion about what it means, but I asked one rabbi, who's very good in Arabic, and he said, you know, that's not far-fetched. So, and they have different opinions about who Shiloh is. Shiluah, I mean, that's one of the names of the Prophet ﷺ, according to Ibn Taymiyyah mentions that Shiluah, and Faraqlaytos also is one of his names, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So, you know, like I said, I wouldn't go. Don't, you know, the best thing, for those of you who are actively involved in interfaith, don't tell them what's wrong with their religion. Just explain what Islam says. Quote the Quran, don't quote their books. This is my advice to you. Don't quote their books. If you're not an expert, I mean, we have some Muslims that are real experts. I mean, I have a friend I was at university with. He, you know, he was a Muslim, but he knew Hebrew, he knew New Testament Greek, and he really knew. He memorized a lot of passages from the Bible. Somebody like that can talk to people, but if you're not an expert, you really shouldn't be quoting those books, because you'll get yourselves into trouble doing that. So I'm not really doing this to kind of rah-rah and, you know, no, it's more to just strengthen our own faith, that when Allah says that الَّذِي يَجِدُونَهُ مَكْتُوبًا عِنْدُهُ فِي التَّوْرَاةِ وَالْإِنْجِيلِ, they find him described in the Torah, in the Injil, that there are verses that do apply to the Prophet ﷺ, and that one in Isaiah is one of the ones that the scholars mention, and I don't feel it's taken out of context. I mean, obviously you can interpret it different ways. So, anyway, having said that, I don't want people taking my PowerPoint going to the local church and thinking, you know, I'll just show them this and they'll all become Muslim. It's not going to work like that. Right. And most of these, unfortunately, most of these things end up being like football matches, you know. The Super Bowl's coming up, right? Who's going to be in it? Does anybody know? Pittsburgh? I don't know. Anyway, like when you have a football game, like in Toronto, what's the hockey team here? What's it called? Maple Leafs. Of course. Okay. What's Vancouver called? Canucks. Oh, Canadians. Right, Canucks. Of course. So when the Canucks meet up with the Maple Leafs, right, with all their missing teeth, And they you know, they have their battle. Like, if it's in Vancouver, they're all like rooting for their Canucks. And then when the Maple Leafs beat them, they don't all of a sudden, you know, become Maple Leaf fans. They just say, we're going to get you next time. And then they have their riot outside, right? Uh-huh. Beat them all up. Anybody wearing a Maple Leaf, even though it's on the national flag, right? And then when the Canucks come to Toronto and play the Maple Leafs, and then the Maple Leafs lose to the Canucks. Does that ever happen? I don't know. But if they do, everybody gets angry, and so we'll get them next time, and then anybody with a Canucks shirt on gets beaten up outside or something. Right? So that's the way people are with religion too. Right? Seriously. It's like football teams and hockey teams. You will get them next time. You know, and that's why those debates don't work. They don't convert. You say, oh, Ahmed Didat, he really beat Jimmy Swagger. Jimmy Swagger didn't convert, right? And then there's times when the Christians have really beaten the Muslims in debate. When Muslims who weren't prepared to debate serious, because some of the Christians know Islam, but not that many Muslims know Christianity. And you shouldn't go up, you know, against... I mean, I wouldn't debate anyway. You know, it wasn't the way of the Prophet ﷺ. Jidad bilatihi ahsan is discussion. It's beautiful discussion, discussing in the best way. It's not mirah, it's not argumentation. It's to discuss things. Ta'adu ila kalimatan sawa'an baynana wa baynakum. Come to the word we share together. You know, it's be inna aw iyyakum la'ala hudan aw fi dhalalin mubin. One of us is rightly guided. It's either you or us. That's what the Quran says for the Prophet to save them. One of us is rightly guided. Look, it's either you or maybe it's you. You know? That's what the Quran says. Maybe you're rightly guided. It's not like you're all going to hell and you're not. No, like allow the possibility. Maybe they're right. Maybe we're wrong. But you need qualified people to be doing those discussions. The average Muslim shouldn't be doing that. It's dangerous. It's dangerous for them, and it's also misrepresenting the Prophet ﷺ and his religion, because he only sent people that were really skillful to do that. So, anyway, having said that, is that okay? The Prophet ﷺ said in a hadith, and this is another just stunning prediction, تَتَّبِعَنَّ سَنَنَ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ شِبْرًا بِشِبْرًا ذَرْعًا بِذَرْعًا حَتَّى لَوْ دَخَلُوا جُحْرَ ضَبٍّ لَدَخَلْتُمُوهُ. You will follow the sanan, the way. Sanan is a path, not sunan. Sanan with a fatha is a path. You will follow the way of the previous civilizations, handspan by handspan, arms length by arm length, cubit by cubit. That's a cubit. You have a shibr and a dhira'. To such a degree that if one of them goes down a lizard's hole, you would follow. It's amazing. The Prophet's companion said, Al-Yahudu wa Nasara, Ya Rasulullah. I mean, they're like shocked. You know, Al-Yahudu wa Nasara, Ya Rasulullah. And he said, Faman, who else? Which is also a miracle of the Prophet's that the Jews and the Christians, I mean, isn't it amazing that this planet is ruled by the Jewish and the Christian traditions? I mean, even though the Christians have largely become secularized, they still associate culturally with their Christian civilization. And the Jewish element is amazing. It's one of the miracles of Bani Israel. I mean, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given them amazing intellectual talents, and cultural talents. I mean, they're just a really amazing people. I mean, undeniably, you can't, anybody that denies the extraordinary talents, qualities, and abilities of the Jewish community is simply denying reality. And they're very important as a community. They have a lot of influence in these Western countries, despite the fact that they're minorities. And that's not conspiracy theory, it's just fact. It's not some all the Jews are in on this thing. No, it just so happens that there are many Jews that are professors at universities, medical doctors, in the banking industry, especially in the venture capital banks, I mean, a lot of it is Jewish. You know, Goldman Sachs, all these organizations. I mean, you could see Wall Street, a lot of Jewish in Wall Street. You know, so but to say somehow, oh, it's all the Jews. I mean, that's just stupidity. It's not Bernie Schwartz, your next door neighbor, or something. I mean, he's not part of some global cabal, you know, plotting to take over the world. You know? So, but the Prophet said, the Jews and the Christians, O Messenger of God. He replied, if not them, then who? Which is in Sahih al-Bukhari. Qadi Iyad, radiallahu anhu, the great Andalusian, Moroccan, he was originally from Andalusia, but Sebta is where he was. He was a Qadi though in Andalusia. He says, Shibran bi Shibran, Dara'an bi Dara'an, means, and the lizard hole are tropes for complete imitation. In other words, it's a turn of phrase for complete imitation. So, you know, you can see, no offense to any brothers and sisters from Saudi Arabia, but I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, we have in the heart of the Arabian Peninsula now, I mean, that could be a scene from L.A. or, and the Golden Arches in the background. My God, I didn't even notice that. Yeah, that wasn't intentional. But I mean, this is, McDonald's. I mean, what's McDonald's doing in Arabia? What's it doing in Mecca? Did you know the Golden Arches? That, like, is the first thing you see as you're coming into the city. You know, my brother, my older brother, is not even Muslim. He told me he almost cried the first time he saw it. He just said, don't they know the city's sacred? Bolivia is the first country where all the McDonald's had to close down. Just recently, finally, after years. Because McDonald's will run at losses because they know that it's hard to get the adult generation, but the kids, they have Ronald McDonald, they have toys and everything like that. Although Ronald McDonald gives me the creeps. I mean, if I was a kid, I'd just run the other way. You know? So Bolivia, literally, they had to shut them all down. Hooray for Bolivia. I'm serious. Yeah, bravo. Bravo. Yeah. And you know what they said, the reason? Somebody went down there to find out. He heard all these. They said, food is meant to be prepared with love and shared with family. And we don't want to eat that kind of food. It tastes horrible. I mean, anybody who eats real food cannot eat McDonald's. The only way you can eat McDonald's is because you've been eating processed food all your life. Once you start eating real food, you will throw up if you try to eat something from McDonald's. And I'm not exaggerating, really. I'm not making that up. So yes, I am anti-McDonald's. I'm anti-Pepsi. I'm anti-Coca-Cola. I'm anti-anything that you recognize the name. I'm troubled by it. Right? I like things that are like home. You know, I mean, we need to be cultivating. We used to have victory gardens during World War II where people were told to grow gardens in their houses. A lot of South Asian community, the grandmas will grow gardens in the backyards because that's what they do in India and Pakistan and things. Right? They grow gardens and have vegetables. They eat their own tomatoes and things. And now you've got Monsanto and all these companies that are changing the actual structures of these seeds. And then this was obviously the one that we mentioned in the beginning with the hadith of Jibreel, that you will see the amma will taridu rabbataha, she'll give birth to her mistress. The ulama differ on what that means. Some of them mean, and this did occur during certain periods of Islam, where a concubine would be a consort of one of the rulers, and then the child that came from it would actually become a ruler. That did happen. Some of them say that's the meaning. Others say that it means that parents will be so mistreated that their children will actually treat them as if they're slaves, ordering them about. And we certainly can see that. And then also that you'll see the barefoot, hufat al-urat, ri'ashah, right? The barefoot, destitute herders of goats vying with one another by building increasingly taller buildings. La ilaha illallah. So Sadaqa Rasulullah. In another narration, he was asked, who are these hungry, destitute people? And he said, Al-Arab. They're the Arabs. So the Prophet specifically said that the Arabs on the Arabian Peninsula are going to be vying in building taller and taller buildings. And now, after they built this building, then they announced in Saudi Arabia, we're going to do the Mile High, even outdo that one. And then Qatar said, no, we're going to build the tallest one. And no, it's in Malaysia. See, Malaysia got outdone by... So everybody want, it used to be America Empire State Building is like this, like Lego building compared to these things. You know, and then you see it's just getting higher and higher. You know, Oman, the Sultanate of Oman, it's illegal to build over like five stories. Because من تواضع لله رفعه الله. If you stay humble, Allah will elevate you. And cannot. You know, it's a haqq ala Allah. مَا ارْتَفَعَ شَيْءٌ فِي الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا يَضَعَهَا حَقٌ عَلَى اللَّهِ. It's a right of God. Nothing will get too high in this world except Allah will abase it. So it's just better to stay low, stay humble. Right? And then obviously the Burj al-Sa' in Mecca, and we'll get to a hadith about that. And then Jabal Umar, you see that where all those, see all that there? There used to be a mountain there. And the Prophet ﷺ said, لا تقوم الساعة حتى تزول الجبال عن أماكنها. The end of time won't come until you see mountains removed from their places. And these are sacred mountains. You're not supposed to cut a tree in Mecca. And yet mountains now are removed with impunity. I mean, it's, for me, it's one of the most troubling things. You go to Mecca, I mean, it's just, it's really sad to see that. Here's the plans, my friends. That's the plan for Mecca. You know, to get rid of the Ottoman, the last remnants of the Ottoman. There's no history. History's gone. All the mountains are going to be gone. It's going to be complete flat. It's just amazing. I mean, these are sacred mountains, you know, but... Well, I think partly one, there's no sense of the sacred... amongst modern Muslims. Dr. Nasser was talking about this if you were at the conference. Muslims have lost a sense of sanctity, that the creation actually has a sanctity, that mountains have a sanctity. You can't just go and remove a mountain. Right? When كَانَ مَكْرُهُمْ لَتَزُرُمْ مِنْهُمْ جِبَالٍ. Allah says, even if their plots remove mountains, it's a negative thing to remove mountains. I mean, mountains are أوتاد. You know, they're pillars for the earth. But I don't know, Muslims don't really appreciate history anymore for some reason. I don't fully get it. Well, you know, we have people in California that if you try to cut down a 1,000-year-old redwood tree, they literally live in it for 2 years to make sure that you can't. Right? Julia Butterfly, she lived in it, you can Google her. She lived in a redwood tree for almost 2 years, so they wouldn't cut it down. So I don't know. It's only if Muslims, you know, have some sense of. You know, I mean, I've spoken to them. I mean, I've spoken to the times that I've had access to the rulers there. I've always tried to say that, you know, things need to be preserved. And it's like I would even argue not for tabarruk, but just for history. You know, even if you just cut them off, don't let people visit them, but don't just remove them. I mean, we had wells that were the Prophet drank from, that all of the through the history of Islam, they were preserved. So the bid'ah, Shaykh Abdullah bin Bayy said, the bid'ah is to remove them. Omar ibn Abdul Aziz, when he became caliph, he preserved all of the places where the Prophet ﷺ prayed. When he was governor of Medina, he went everywhere. Ibn Umar went to every single place and prayed 2 rak'ats where the Prophet prayed. That's the proof that the ulama use for the that you can go to places where the Prophet prayed and pray 2 rak'ats. There's nothing wrong with that. This idea somehow that it's a bid'ah because it's not mansus, it's not wajib. But tatabbu' Rasul ﷺ is a good thing. I mean, even Ibn Omar, he used to go on his journey, he would, you know, in Medina, there was a place where he'd move his camel. And somebody asked him, you know, I always see you doing that. He said, I saw the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam do it. And he said, there used to be a rock there. He said, I don't care. You know, that's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because he did it. Whether there's a rock there or not anymore, the fact that he did it, you know, I want to do it. And that's a school of love. You don't care as long if the beloved did it. She dyed her hair purple. I'm going to dye my hair purple. There's people out there to do that. Right? I mean, there's like people that, you know, they fall in love with somebody that has tattoos and then suddenly they're getting tattoos. And that's just secular love. What about Majnun Layla? What do you do with that? One of the signs of the hour is that wealth increases. يَكْثُرُ الْمَالُ وَتَفْشُ التِّجَارَ. Tijara will be everywhere. I mean, look now. All of you have now your cell phones with you. You can go on and just do commerce now. You can buy online. Everywhere you are, there's commerce everywhere. Right? Tijara is everywhere. I mean, you can't, like, you stay in a hotel everywhere. It's all Tijara. Like, they give you these bottles, $6.50 for some water. You know, I mean, man, talk about bukhala. Really? I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, to put the $6.50 in the bill and make me feel like you're being hospitable. It's like a water bottle for $6.50. Unbelievable. Ignorance becomes yadhar al-jahl. Ignorance will become widespread. And then a man, while conducting a commercial deal, will say, hold on, let me consult so-and-so from such a such place. And despite the vastness of the place, no agent is found. That's in a necessity. Look at this. I mean, now, you know, they call up before they make the deal and do istishara with some guy on the other end of the earth. And the Prophet, it's amazing. Despite the vastness of the place, there's nobody around. He's calling somebody far away. Before the end of time, you will see knowledge removed and widespread ignorance. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not take kindly to a rude, loudmouthed person in a marketplace who is dead at night, right, is a donkey in the day, and is learned about the ways of the world, but ignorant about the ways of the hereafter. I mean, how many people fall into that category today? You know, they're dead at night, they don't do any night prayers, they're a himar during the day, they're just working, and they know the ways of the world, but they don't know anything about the akhirah. I mean, that's, wallahi, that's modern people. At this time, knowledge will be called ignorance, and ignorance knowledge. The end of time won't come until fahsh is widespread, which is, fahsh is dressing immodestly and speaking immodestly, according to the scholars. So swearing becomes commonplace. It used to be, you couldn't swear. When I was a kid, you got your mouth washed out with soap. Seriously. I mean, parents would literally put soap in your mouth. It didn't taste good. And that was for saying things like hell or damn. I mean, now you hear people swearing in public. They have no shame. Even though there's little kids, you'll hear people using the foulest language in public places. They don't care. Nobody cares anymore. The scholars say undignified dress and foul language in ordinary conversation. The end of time won't come until the wu'ul, yahrik al-wu'ul, right? The wu'ul will perish and the tahut rise up. Sheikh Abdullah al-Qadi thinks that tahut refers to the westerners because the tahut in Arabic means the west. In the Quran it's used for west. So he says the tahut are western. And they asked him, who are the wu'ul? And who are the tahut? And he said, the nobility and aristocratic people and the lowest people who lived under the feet of the people and no one knew anything about them. That could also be interpreted, I think, is the uprising of people who've been oppressed for long times. And these people, the aristocrats living in their bubbles. You know, so this is kind of like the revolution that occurred in people. So, and this is what they say, the learning and the intelligence. But these are ta'wilat. I mean, I think this hadith could be interpreted also just about how the lower classes rise up. I mean, this is kind of so. The end of time won't come until the wealth of the government, meant to be distributed among the people, becomes a source of enrichment for the few who keep it amongst themselves. And the wealth entrusted to people is seen as an opportunity for embezzlement. I mean, that's welcome to Wall Street. I mean, that's all the tax dollars to bail them out. There they all are. The end of time won't come until people actually study for other than religious reasons. This is very important because I want you to take note. Historically, all civilizations understood study to be related to the sacred. It's a modern idea of studying for secular reasons. Even if you studied medicine, it was to serve the community. It was a way of serving your religion. Every religion, Hinduism, Buddhism, they all had this concept that studying was actually an act of worship. Whereas now, people don't think of it in those terms at all. So, يُتَعْلَمُ لِغَيْرِ وَجْهِ اللَّهِ. The end of time won't come until people treat their friends with great respect and their parents with utter contempt. يُدْنِي صَدِيقَهُ وَيُبْعِدُ وَالِدَيْهِ. You know, so he'll draw his friends near, distance his parents. Treating a wife well and a mother terribly. I know there's also, I have to say this, there's also the mother-in-law that has a martyr syndrome. So we know about that too. You don't treat me like you treat your wife. And it's more that there's a lot of guilt, and so that's also a problem. So I'm not going to deny that that is a problem in some families. That's a noted problem. Mother-in-laws that, you know, the mother-in-law that is going to split the marriage apart because they can't. You know, the wife is never good enough for her son. And that does happen sometimes. And then the old folks' homes, you know, Darul Ajza. My friend from Mauritania, Sheikh Nahab bin Mahfoud, who's the son of Sheikh Abdullah bin Bayya, my father had an operation, and they have these in California, they have these transitional places where if you had a hip operation or something, and they also have old folks homes with them because a lot of older people get hip op. So my father had to stay there for like 4 or 5 days as a transition before getting out. So we used to go visit him every day, and Sheikh and I came with me one day. He couldn't sleep for 3 days. He was just so distressed. I mean, literally, he was like, he went into a state of shock because he could not believe that old people could be abandoned like that in these homes. And old folks' homes, they're now starting to come to the Muslim world for the first time in our history. And they're a very dark sign, a very dark sign. When a society begins to treat its old people like garbage that's discarded, you know, and they consider their humanity paying for a stranger who oftentimes abuses those people, because some of the worst cases of abuse occur in these old folks' homes. And I did a rotation in old folks' homes, so I know how horrible it is. Because the people can't stand a lot. They're underpaid. They pay them often minimum wage working in these homes. If somebody wants a really nice, because as the graying of Canada and America increases, if you want a really nice, something nice to do, do like really nice homes for older people where they're actually treated with dignity, and they have, there's like learning and healthy food and doing like have spiritual things and have communal entertainment rooms where they can actually watch things together instead of being isolated in their rooms. And I mean, that would be a really worthwhile thing to do, because there's going to be more and more of these. But creating alternative models to these horrible homes, you know, and then having a segment of it, 15 or 20%, for indigent people that couldn't afford that, because a lot of people end up homeless on the street. Some of these homeless people are old people because they just fell through the cracks. They don't have social mechanisms. The end of time won't come until people ornament their homes like robes are ornamented today. Becomes all zakhrafa. So that's my living room. just kidding. The end of time won't come until knowledge is sought from the immature. يُلْتَمِسْ الْعِلْمُ مِنَ الْأَصَاغِرِ. That knowledge is sought from أَصَاغِرِ. When Ibn Abd al-Barr was asked, he says, it's people that have no chain of transmission. There's no senate. They didn't study with people who studied with people. They just learned from books and things. And also these are the رُوَيْبِضَ. يَظْهَرَ الرُوَيْبِضَ. And the رُوَيْبِضَ, the Prophet was asked about them. He said, السَّفِيهُ يَتَكَلَّمُ فِي أَمْرِ الْعَامَّةِ. It'll be fools talking about the general affairs of people. You know, like a lot of people that go online and put all their opinions and this, that, or the other. And then Imam Ibn al-Mubarak was asked who they were, and he replied, those who use their opinions over established principles. And then Ibn Abd al-Barr said, they are those who have no chain of transmission but study on their own. The end of time won't come until people are afflicted with hemorrhoids. تظهر البواسير. And this is a new phenomenon because it's from inactivity and constipation. And a lot of constipated people because they don't eat whole food anymore. They eat processed food. And processed food, your bodies aren't designed to eat processed food. You need fiber. Sayyidina Umar said, لا ترموا النخال فإنها من الطعام. Don't throw out the bran because it's from the food. And one of the first signs, Imam al-Ghazali says, one of the first bid'ah that showed up in Medina was sifted wheat, that they started using refined wheat, like white bread now. Because they used to have very... I mean, I've eaten real bread in some of the traditional villages, and there's like wheat pieces coming out of it. You know, it's just... I mean, really, and you eat that, and there's no way you're gonna get constipated or anything like that. Those people don't have that problem. So, you know, and trust me, you don't need to get any surgery for this, any, you know, this can all be treated by changing your diet. I mean, there's some people that have problems with veins, you know, they have weak veins, like varicose veins. So you can have genetic disposition, undeniably. And that's a different thing. But for most people, this can be treated just by changing your diet. And then in alternative medicine, hemorrhoids will come from being stressed about deadlines and things like that. So people will get flare-ups because of being stressed out. So there's ways of treating these things. But then the Prophet also said fadij, which are strokes. Now strokes are blockages like the hemorrhoids. They're related because they're blockages in the body. Sayyidina Umar said, قِلَّةَ الْحَرَكَةَ تَعْقِلَ الْبَدَرِ. That not moving enough will create blockages in the body. So it's very important to move. We are designed to exercise. If you do not exercise, you are oppressing your body. You should be exercising every day. Taking walks. Doing whatever you have to do, but you should be doing some exercise every day. And you should be eating well. Muslims should eat well. You should eat wholesome food. You shouldn't be eating a lot, like overeating. Most of us take far too much calories, and that's a sign of the end of time that we'll get to. So, and then sudden death becomes widespread. Al-mawt al-faja'i, which is where people just have strokes or heart attacks. These aren't normal ways of dying, people. People didn't used to die like this. You know, they would get sick and have time to get their affairs in order. I mean, now they just drop dead. They literally get up and drop dead. It's a sign of the end of time. And it's related to how they're eating, the levels of stress that they're under, all those things. So it's really important. Sayyidina Umar, lack of exercise causes many problems in the body. And then heart disease. These are just some of the statistics. It's pretty shocking here. 10.4 million people in the United States have digestive diseases. I mean, all you have to do is go to the pharmacy. Just look at all those antacids and some of them used to be prescription drugs. I mean, now they're over the counter. They used to be prescription drugs. You couldn't get Zantac and these things except from a doctor, like a gastroenterologist. Now you just go, and people think this is solving their problems. It's not. It's masking the symptoms. It's making things worse. You should have no dyspepsia. Dyspepsia is a modern disease. You shouldn't have... I mean, people overate in the past, undeniably. But I guarantee you, You should have no dyspepsia. You should have no gastric reflux. None of these things. These are modern diseases from overeating, eating too late, eating the wrong things. When you get to be 40, you should cut down on spicy foods and things like that. In Hinduism, the sunyasa, they give up all that kind of food. They call it rajas food because it's stimulating food. They give it all up. Traditionally, people ate more simple as they got older. Because when you're young, you have a lot of heat, you can digest. As you get older, you need to eat simpler. Meals should be light in the evening or eat early. I mean, these are prophetic principles. I'm not, you know, this is just stuff I'm making up. If you do these things, you won't have these problems. But if you're going to that counter in the drugstore and getting those things, you know, I mean, maybe every once in a blue moon, you know, an antacid or something like that. All you have to do, if you really want to know, is just take some toothpaste. Squeeze the toothpaste and swallow the toothpaste. The same as antacid, bicarbonate. The same thing. You just don't go and buy that thing. Just take some toothpaste, swallow the toothpaste. Not too much. You don't want to OD on toothpaste. And you can OD on toothpaste, which is why there's warnings about letting little kids get hold of the toothpaste. So, all these things you're learning tonight. My God. Towards the latter days, time speeds up. يَتَقَارَبَ الزَّمَانِ. Now, this is now literal because we know we've lost lecto seconds on the day. When they had that earthquake in Argentina, the day got shorter. The time is actually speeding up. So even the Earth's rotation is faster than it was before. La ilaha illallah. But also the experience of time. يَنْقُصُ الْعِلْمِ. Knowledge diminishes. And then the tribulations, widespread tribulations. Selfishness, shuh, and deadly rioting, harsh, are everywhere. And this is all predicted. That's why when you see these things, صَدَقَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. And if you say, look, don't think like these things are, you know, it's just maktub and it's from God. I mean, that's all true, but that doesn't negate people's responsibility and their free will. Because foreknowledge of God, which he affords the prophets, he gives them some insights into what's going to happen. This is because Allah knows everything. But that doesn't negate the fact that people are still earning their actions. So this isn't an excuse to say, you know, oh, this is just... And they asked the prophet about the harj, what is it? He said, al-qatal, al-qatal. Time flies, tempest forget. The night and days will not pass away until the world is in the hands of Luqa ibn Luqa. I mean, Luqa ibn Luqa is an expression Arabs use to describe someone who has no praiseworthy qualities, no qualities of virtue, low, contemptible people with no redeeming qualities or character. Where did we go? No, go back. Okay, it's not in there. Anyway, I had a picture of a rock star there. What's that? Okay. So the best of generations is my own khayrul qurun qarni, maladini yununhum. Then those who follow, After them, people will swear oaths without being asked. They will betray and lose trustworthiness. Make promises and not fulfill them, and obesity will become more and more prevalent. I mean, this is seriously, think about this, folks. Because remember, what was the criterion in the Bible for a true prophet? If he tells things and then they come true, he's a true prophet. The Prophet ﷺ predicted the obesity crisis, and this is a global crisis. In fact, the Surgeon General in the United States said this is far more dangerous to the security of the United Nations, to the United States, than terrorism. Obesity. But there's no war on fat. Seriously, why isn't there a war on fat? You know why? Because all the fast food companies put these guys into power. One of the people at the National Endowments of Health said, we manufacture our food like crack cocaine. It's addictive. Rats, if they're given fat and sugar, can't stop eating. They die. So you give these young kids fats and sugars, and they just keep eating and eating. And then they have malnutrition. Because if you watch, there's a documentary. I mean, the best thing to do is read the China Study. But if you're not going to read that, at least see Forks Over Knives, which is a documentary based on McDonald's work. And one of the things that happens is that the actual absorptive power in your intestines becomes coated with all this bad food. And so you're not actually absorbing micronutrients. And so people are actually eating a lot of food, but they're malnourished. So we have a crisis of malnourishment. That's not like Africa, where somebody's got a belly out to here because they're starving. No, these are bellies out to here because their bodies are being fed lots of food, but they're actually starving from micronutrients. They're not getting the nutrients that they need. And this is a real serious problem. Yad harufim is simen. Fatness, obesity will be prevalent amongst them. And these are, look, here's, right, among adults, this is like what's happening in the U.S. And Canada, I think you're a close second, huh? You know, Europe is bad too. But you go to the Gulf states, my God, we have a real crisis. I'm serious. We have a really serious crisis. Because these young kids are so overweight. Now, for women, just not to make you feel better, but, you know, women, it's natural to have body fat on the women more. So, you know, it's not a healthy thing for a woman to get too skinny. Like these women now that do all the exercises and get down to 5% body fat. It's not a healthy. Your period stops, by the way, if you do that. If you exercise too much, lose too much weight, you won't have a period, meaning you're losing your womanhood. So, you know, the women, it's okay to have some weight. I mean, in Mauritania, you won't get married if you don't have a lot of weight. But it's not bad to have, you know, weight. And it used to be that in the West, heavyset women were actually preferred over skinny women. But that changed when they started using skinny models because they wanted the men, you know, the people to look at the clothes and not the women. So they thought, okay, we'll put skinny women there. And then people's taste changed because they started using all these skinny women. I mean, there's a lot of sociological stuff that's looked into this. But the men, you really make it, you know, I like New Year's resolutions. You can do them in Muharram, do them in January, whenever. But New Year's resolutions are good things. You know, to resolve, to make certain changes. I mean, you should do that really every Friday. You should have Jum'ah resolution. You know, just we need to make resolutions to change. The nadhar is a traditional way of doing that because the nadhar forces you. You make a vow to God. I'm going to lose 50 pounds this year for the sake of God because I want to honor my body. I want my body to be stronger. I want it to be more healthy. I want to be able to serve you better. And ask Allah to help you. You can lose weight. Don't lose it fast. It's not a good thing to lose weight fast. But you can lose weight by very simple things. Changing your diets, going to more plant-based diets, you know, eating more vegetables, water, drinking water, things like that. You know, these are things that we need to be doing to be healthy. You know, we should be much healthier. I mean, this is your... And if you're basically healthy now, what a blessing. If you don't have major diseases and... There's people suffering, they wish they had the health that you have. There's people that wish they could exercise. They can't because they're too sick to exercise. And then the end of time won't come until mountains are removed from their locations and you will see momentous changes that no one has ever seen before. And so you're seeing mountains literally just strip mined and moved. And then, I mean, just amazing things. Some people say this didn't really happen. I don't have a problem with it, but Allahu a'lam. And some people say that, you know. So there's an argument that the photographs were actually phony because they didn't have the technology actually to protect the film from the x-rays, you know, there's a whole, if you go online, there's a whole world in there about this, but, I mean, basically, I think they got to the moon on a problem time. Aloan. And then look at this. I mean, it's just amazing, the technology that we have. And it's getting, I'll tell you something, the changes we're going to see, and especially you young people, the changes you're going to see in your lifetime. If you haven't seen the new Toyota cars that are coming out, that they're planning, it's beyond belief. I mean, they've got like a holographic person, like, giving you directions. And turn left up here. I mean, it's a little distracting, you know, to crash. You know, to have a person in your car, a small person, a Japanese small person. Like airplanes. I don't care what they... I've read, like, how airplanes fly, you know, the lift and the whole physics of it. I don't... It's still a miracle to me. Mm-hmm. How you get that thing off the ground is just beyond belief. And we fly through the air and don't even think about it. The end of time won't come until a descendant of Qahtan. So Qahtan is the father of the Yemenis. Causes all of humanity to move, and all he has is a stick. Right? I mean, la ilaha illallah. That's my interpretation. All he has is a stick. Yeah. He never even fired a gun, except for on the movies, you know. Amazing. He's a Qahtani too, really. He really is. Lawad. This to me is one of the most amazing hadiths. In terms of predictions, إِذَا رَأَيْتَ مَكَّةَ بُعِجَتْ كَظَائِمَا. When you see the mountains of Mecca with holes through them, and ba'aj is to pierce, like to... The ba'ajtu batnahu means shaqaqtu batnahu, like I pierced his stomach. So it's ba'aj relates, and I found this hadith in Asas al-Balagha by Zamakhshari under the Madda Ba'ain Jin, because I was just reading the book. I like to read dictionaries, and I was reading that book, and I found this hadith in there, and then I looked it up, and it, sure enough, it was in Ibn Abi Shaybah. But if you see the mountains of Mecca with holes through them, and you see the buildings of Mecca reaching the tips of the mountains of Mecca, then know that the hour has cast its shadow. فَقَدْ أَظَلَّتَ السَّعَةُ. Now, when I looked up in Imam Suyuti's, he has a really nice book that gives you his commentary on what's called غريب الحديث, unusual statements made in hadith. And when I looked up that alqat faqad adallat as-sa'atu, he said hadhihi isti'aratun tadullu 'ala dunu al-amri. This is a metaphor that indicates that something is near, because the Arabs say adallat, yani it means it's near, like it's the shadows. Once the shadow shows up, it's not long before the thing that's casting the shadow shows up, right? That's the idea behind it. But we have a principle in Usul which says, أصول الكلام الحقيقة, that you should always interpret things literally, but unless there's a reason to go to a non-literal interpretation. Because أصول الكلام الحقيقة, if I say جاء زيدٌ, زيد came, أو زارني زيدٌ, you should take that literally and not say, oh, I meant in a dream. Right? Zarani fi manami. Because I said zarani zaydun. So if you hear that, you should take that literally. Unless I said zarani zaydun fi manami. Right? There's no reason to say that it was a dream if I said it. So asr al-kalam al-haqiqa. So if you think about this, all right. Now, first of all, there's the tunnels, anfar of Mecca. But here, now this is called Burj al-Sa'a. That's what it's called. The Tower of the Sa'a. This tower now casts a shadow over the Kaaba.
So, and this is the first building in Mecca that has now, if you go to the highest mountain of Mecca, it's equal to the mountain. So when the Prophet ﷺ said, when you see the tips of the buildings reach the heights of the mountains, فَقَدْ أَضَلَّتَ السَّعَةُ, it means the clock in modern Arabic, السَّعَةُ is clock. But this is called a sa'a, burj as-sa'a. It means the sa'a has cast its shadow. So this to me is an ishara on dunu as-sa'a, that the end of time is near. But it also can be taken literally that that it has cast its shadow now on, even on the Kaaba. Unbelievable. No, believable. Sadaqa Rasulullah. But it is, it's so hard to fathom. You know, really, this should put, your iman should be going up. If it's not going up, you're really in trouble. I'm worried. I mean, it's amazing that the Prophet ﷺ predicted all of these things, and for anybody to doubt him. Towards the latter days, great floods will become more prevalent. Fuyulan, fuyulanat. So you'll see great floods. There's also, Imam Malik has a riwayah where he said, يَشْتَدُ حَرَّ الْأَرْضِ وَيَشْتَدَ الْبَلَاءُ عَلَى النَّاسِ, that the earth will heat up and it will cause great tribulations for people. So, and that's mentioned in the Utbiyah. And now you're seeing unprecedented floods in areas that didn't used to flood. The end of time won't come until a man's shoe will talk. And that's a sahih hadith. لَا تَقُمَ سَحَتَّى to hadith al mar'a na'luhu, right? Sadaqa Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Wallahi, this should make, I mean, it just make you shake. This is the talking shoe. You can buy it from Nike. Now this hadith, which is in Sahih Muslim, the earth, تُقِي الْأَرْضَ أَفْلَاذَ كَبْدِيهَا, the earth will vomit forth the hidden treasures of its liver, resembling giant pillars of gold and silver. Now I want you to think about this, because the Prophet ﷺ said tuqi'u, and I actually worked when I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't that young, but when I was in, I think a junior in high school, my junior senior year in the summer, I worked on an oil rig. So I was, they called them roustabouts, and I started out just cleaning up and doing stuff, and then I got promoted to the wrench. The, you know, the pipe breaker, which is you have this big suspended wrench, and the pipes, as you bring them down, you have to add pipe, and then when you pull them up to change the bit, because the bits get broken down, and when the bit comes up, you have to break the pipes, because they screw on, so you screw them on, and they're held up by a big chain. There's a guy up at the top. I don't know how it goes now, but when I was working on it, you had a guy on the top. And then you had, my grandfather had an oil company, so that's, and my father was, after he left teaching, he went to work for my grandfather, and then he started wildcatting. So that's how I ended up doing it. It's just a family thing. But it was good pay. It was like 1976, and I was making a lot more money than all my friends working at some fast food restaurant. But anyway, you know, you have to... You have to, so you have this giant wrench that's suspended with these wires, and then you wrap it around, and you have to jerk it, so you tighten the thing, so it's way tight, and then you break it. And a lot of those guys lose fingers, you know. Because you get caught sometime. And I remember once my glove got caught. You know, I was thinking, oh my God, I thought I lost my finger. And they all started clapping, you know, the guys. Because it's like an initiation if you lose a pinky or something. And then I just ripped it out. And my finger was still there, but the glove got ripped out. So they were all like, next time. I mean, they pride themselves on being very tough people, you know. And I was like vegetarian, I was meditating, I used to bring avocado sandwiches. You know, so they really gave me a hard time right before I became Muslim. But if you ever see a rig go off, I mean, it's just something, you know, it vomits forth the oil. It's amazing. When a well hits, it just vomits forth. Now, if you look, it says it comes from the kebet of the earth. Now, kebet means the middle in Arabic, but if you took that literally, again, the liver, the earth, the idea of the earth having a liver, what does the liver do? What's the essential function of the liver? There are some physicians here. Huh? It cleanses the blood. What else? It stores sugar, right? It stores glycogen, and then when the body needs energy, it breaks down the glycogen, makes sugar. Now, if you look at carbohydrates, which are the energy of the body, hydrocarbons, right, are made of almost the same thing, except there's no oxygen molecule, right? I mean, that's the living thing, which is in the carbohydrates, is the oxygen molecule. But that one hydroxyl molecule, if you take that away, if you add that to hydrocarbons, you get carbohydrates. So this is literally the energy of the earth. And the fact that now, for the first time in human history, we the coal was exhausted, the forests have been exhausted, because historically people cut down trees for energy. So this now is like Allah's gift to human beings, is to give them the glycogen of the earth, you know, this stored energy that was stored. And where did it come from? It came from all this photosynthesis. So it's the same carbohydrates. The source is the same, right? But what's happening is, just like people that overconsume sugar and false energy, right, they end up getting diabetes. And diabetes, one of the central signs of diabetes is what's called acidosis, where you become too acidic, right? And so if you look now on our planet, it's becoming too acidic because we're overusing all of this hydrocarbon energy. So it's becoming acidic. You've got acidic soil. The oceans are becoming more acidic. All of these things are happening right now. And so we're literally suffering from the fact that we are in this massive overconsumption of hydrocarbons. And what do they call that? What, you know, when they say you've got a heavy carbon footprint. So the word that they use to describe your impact on the earth is your carbon footprint. الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنَا. You know, عِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ. The servants of God are those who walk lightly on the earth. Muslims should have the lightest carbon footprints on the planet. We shouldn't be participating in all of this madness. You know, because this is total insanity. And the Prophet ﷺ predicted that these things would be like pillars. What do they call it? Black gold. Right? These pillars that are... And then towards the end of time, you will see gross transformation in people. Among them, those who dance with musical instruments on their heads. عَلَى رُؤُسِهِمْ and ma'azif. They will have on their heads musical instruments. La ilaha illallah. Spending the night only to wake up like donkeys and pigs.
Monkeys.
Now, I think Steve Jobs had a good sense of humor. And see, what I interpret this, because it's a very interesting ad, you know, Apple. Here's what I interpret. There was a film when I was a kid, it was called Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the 1950s. And what in the film, you know, this alien comes to the earth and invades her. And the way that it gets people is when you fell asleep, like, you know, going to sleep has spiritual meaning as well. When you fell asleep, it was called a pod, and it would get you. And then it would grow you. The pod would grow you while you were sleeping, and then you would be dead by the time the morning came. And the pod was you. And so it became the pod people. Right? So it's I pod. Right? That you're no longer, like, you don't, you know, the verb to be is just removed. Like, instead of saying I am a pod, that indicates that there's being there. But if you just say I pod, your being has been removed. You're just a pod person. I pod. And that's why they're shadows, because the original people aren't there anymore. They're just pod people. They've lost their, they're just lost in the pod world. Right? And if you look at Fahrenheit 451, how many people had to read that in school? Yeah. Ray Bradbury's dystopic nightmare in the future. But remember, he has, everybody's listening, they have the earphones, and they just walk around in these dazes. They're no longer present. So this is the shadow people. We're living in the time of the shadow people. They're shadows of their former self. They don't even have time to think. Because see, what you're doing when you're just watching, 8 hours of television a day, or you're listening to musicology, you no longer have time just to reflect. Your mind is always filled with somebody else. They're filling your mind with something else. And so you lose that sense of self, where you actually have internal life. Your internal being is being deracinated. It's just uprooted. If the end of time comes and you have a seedling in your hand, إِذَا وَقَعَتَ عَلَى أَحَدِكُمْ السَّاعَةُ بِيَدِهِ فَسِيلًا فَإِنِ اسْتَطَعَنِ يَغْرِسَ فَلْيَغْرِسَ. If the end of time comes on one of you and you have a seedling in your hand and you're able to plant it, if you can finish planting it before the end of time comes, then do it. It's an amazing hadith. It's a beautiful statement. Sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Because what that is saying is your life's going to end, whether you're part of that last generation. And I don't personally believe the end of time is a ways off. We're not there yet. I mean, there's a lot of signs, undeniably, and just in what we've gone through, you can see a lot of them. But we're not. It's 2012 is not the end of the world, really. Trust me, it's not. There's a lot of things that have to happen before that actually happens. But we're certainly closer. Each day is a day closer. Whether we're around, Imam Suyuti and Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani argued that the end of this ummah would be in this century, the 15th century of Hijrah. So they did argue that by the end of this century there would be no Islam left. And we know that Islam will eventually leave the earth. Dawkins is going to win here. He will. The atheists will win. They win. They'll convince the majority of people that there isn't God, that we're just evolutionary creatures that came out of nothingness. It's all chance. It's all randomness. They're going to win. So you have to accept that fact. I mean, we should fight it. But the hadiths are very clear that they do win. So, and welcome to their world. You know, it's going to be a horrible place. If they think religion is bad, wait till they see what the planet's like without religion. Right? They'll say, well, it's going to be like Finland and Denmark, and it'll be really nice, and everybody will be taken care of. And just look at the countries that don't have religion anymore. They're doing much better than the countries that have religion. Well, then why do they have the highest suicide rates on the planet? Oh, well, that's seasonal affective disorder. Because they don't have enough sun up there. We can treat that with ot lamps and just give them like solar therapy and they'll feel better. Or we'll work on Prozac, getting it better and better. You know, with happy pills. We're all going to be happy. Right? Just take drugs. And there's a case for that. You know, people aren't well. You know, I mean, in California, you know, they have medicinal marijuana. I think America probably, you know, a lot of people need some medicinal marijuana because they're just so miserable. You know, marijuana makes.